Good day.
Hello. How welcome to the Angle Podcast. How are you doing, Scotty?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Oh, nice. Why did you wear the same t-shirt with me?
Yeah, you're wearing the same t-shirt as me, actually.
Oh, okay. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're watching out there or listening on any other streaming platforms, please get your pen and paper ready. Class is officially in session. We have a great guest in the building, Lerato, the business coach. Yay. How are you doing?
Good, good.
We need a drum roll for this one.
Yeah, yeah. Gather the confetti.
Everything.
Everything.
How you doing?
Good, good, thank you.
How was the Joburg traffic?
Eventful. Never a dull moment on these roads, but we're here, we made it.
Thanks excited for making to be it here. Through.
Thank you.
Please introduce yourself to our guests, to our viewers, sorry, who Lerato is, where she comes from, and why she's so famous on TikTok.
First of all, she's not famous.
I follow her, so I know.
So, yes, Lerato is a Soweto girl, born and bred in Johannesburg, Township Han, Ghetto Fabulous.
Zolisto.
I am a mother, I'm a wife, I'm a sister. Most of all, I am a business coach, very passionate about getting people in line. And my tagline is, where income is the outcome. So, you know, getting that foundation
right
in order to make sure that we reach the outcome, which is
income.
Yes.
So how did you make a decision to get into that? Like, what's, did you just wake up, I want to be a business coach, or how did
I think growing up, I've always been a teacher. So I was that girl during holidays, would take the younger kids, teach, that kind of thing. So I've always had a passion to impart knowledge. Love writing, love reading, love learning. So the business bug caught me because my parents ran businesses. So I don't necessarily come from a family of, you know, employees. We're very enterprising. So I think it found me.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
And when did you start the brand Lerato Business Coach?
So it started 2016. It's been a while. I just come back from the University of the Free State where I was doing BCom Economics. And I came back home because I had to drop out.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, what else can I do? You know, registered my first business and okay. So I got a knack for it. Like, oh, I can also help people do what I just did. You know, so that's where it started. And then social media came up and the rest is history. And here we are.
How would you describe the businesses you run? So on the angle here, we're a little more interested in digital culture, creativity, media, money, and governance. But so maybe try and frame it a little bit in terms of your approach to digital. I mean, I know you do lots of things, and digital is a really big word. It's a big world. So maybe just describe some of the things you do check out. So when I checked you out, because I obviously did a little research on you, looked at what you're up to, you've got quite a large basket of products, like lots of different things you've done, like lots of, I wouldn't call them, so go so as far to call them verticals, but maybe you would. Maybe just take us through what you...
All right, so on the digital front is my coaching business I run online. So what I do is that we have three divisions, the company services, which is more compliance-based, and then the resources. This is where like the TikTok came about, the ebooks, the tools of trade came into play, which is all that I push on a digital front. So I'd say that out of all my businesses, this is the only one, my coaching business, that is completely digital. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what services do you offer in this business that you run?
Yeah, so like I said, it's three pillars to the business. So the company services, which is the registration, the tax, the CSD, the CIDB, all of those entities.
I might reach out for you for that.
Please do. And then the resources, this is where we'll equip you with an ebook, a list of funders, a checklist on how to register this and how to be compliant with that, how to qualify for this. So this is where we give you the tools and you just run with it.
Yeah.
And then the second part is where, okay, we put together the funding proposals, the business plans, which is where the consultancy then comes in, where we have to sit and interact with you so that we can put your vision out there.
Yeah. Well, maybe let's start there. Let's start from compliance. So if somebody has just registered a company on CIPC, what advice do you give them from there? I went on CIPC, I registered a company, then what? This is a tech company. Let's say they build websites.
Yeah.
It's a digital agency. They do websites, graphics, such things.
Yeah.
After CIPC, then what happens?
So usually after CIPC, you definitely need to start your branding, positioning yourself, putting yourself out there, figuring out what exactly am I offering, your pricing.
Yeah.
So definitely more on the marketing, who my customer is. So you do that segmentation, you do your planning, this is my structure, these are my working hours. So the foundational aspects in order for you to be a set up tech company. Yeah.
Can you give us an example of maybe a company that you helped that now has a product out there that did not have one before, that after you helped them do that, or something we can get our heads
around? How far along do you want me to go?
Something we can get our heads around in terms of
Just how I walked a journey with someone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Top of mind.
At this rate, I'm hoping to be one of the projects.
At this rate. Let me quickly just think who I helped recently. It's not necessarily in tech, so I don't know if you guys...
No, that's fine.
Yeah, is it fine? Yeah. Okay, so there is a company. Do I name it?
Sure. You want to?
No, I'm not naming it.
They didn't pay you enough.
No, they paid me enough. It's a company called Botta Health Living.
Okay.
Run by a young man in KZN. So what he does is that he makes his own herbs and medicine and stuff. So he wanted to get them out there. So he also wanted to get a lab. So we're looking at getting funding for him to get a place to work out of. So very on the traditional aspect of, holistic medicine. So what we did was we registered the company, and now we are working on, we sorted out his pricing, we sorted out his, because he has an array of offerings. So we had to come up with, okay, what exactly are you going to be providing, healing, what type of healing, body parts, type of thing. So we did had a whole plan where we said, okay, for the head, this is what the product, three minimum. So we did went through that journey with him. And now he is happy to announce that he has his own lab now where he's operating. We dealt with the packaging as well. So we're in the branding phase now. Social media pages are up. So it is a continuous journey that I go with my clients. It's not just I leave you here and you. That's why I think my longevity is based on those return clients who keep coming back
here. So you do the full gamut. So how does your pricing work? Do you just say, okay, here's a service I provide. They pay you for it, and then that kind of ends. But if you're in this long journey with a particular company, are we looking at a percentage of business, or how do you structure things?
No, I definitely. I want to give my clients full autonomy. I don't want I don't want any equity, because how would I then be contributing to a business where I don't know much about, not necessarily in the interest that I have. So the pricing, there are packages that I provide, a startup package. And so if you're coming with me from inception phase, we then don't turn it into a division of services. It just comes in a package where there is that open door to say we meet twice a month. So it more turns into a coaching relationship than it is a ad hoc or give me a company profile, So yeah, I think that's how I would.
Yeah. Now from compliance, what is this thing on CIPC about beneficiaries or?
Beneficial ownership. Yes. Beneficial ownership. So South Africa is trying hard. So South Africa is on a compliance journey to join forces with international compliance requirements. So in the US, it's big. Everyone does beneficial ownership.
What is it? Can you tell us?
So beneficial ownership is the process of you appointing or declaring the division structure in your company in terms of your directors.
Okay.
So they do it to prevent money laundering, fraud, and all those things. So it's just a process of you saying that in our company, Stan has 50%. I have 10%. What that looks like, you submit IDs and you submit a declaration, which is in the form of a mandate to say that Lerato is responsible for 1, 2, 3, so that if anything happens, we know exactly where to go. Because a lot of stuff happens with companies where a lot of fraud takes place. People's companies like get stolen, transferred to people, that kind of thing. So it is an international regulatory compliance that we are now adhering to. You
know. And what are the penalties of that? So say somebody fails to file for that beneficiary, what
dire happens? dire consequences. Penalties in the form of, you know, fines.
It's too late for you.
It's too late. Be careful. company deregistration. So the CIPC is on a massive deregistration campaign. They've anticipated to deregister over 100,000 companies by the end of March. So if you don't file your beneficial ownership, definitely you will be deregistered.
And if I get deregistered, can I get that name back?
So the process of deregistration is also very admin heavy. You need to have documentation like the business bank account from the previous year, business bank account to the current year. Then you need to prove, write a letter. You're basically begging, guys,
help me.
Yeah.
So you just have to file for the
business. So you just have to file. I mean, it's seamless. It's updated immediately. It's free.
Can you do it on CIPC?
Yes, you do it online on the CIPC.
So
that sounds scary, though.
So say I'm a youngster. I mean, I'm still young inside. Say I'm a youngster. I'm still interested in building this in my own businesses. And you know, there's an ecosystem around building a business. There's ideas are a dime a dozen. They're all over the place. But it's in terms of actually making something a little concrete and taking it to market and whatever your product might be. There's different mechanics involved in doing that. How would you suggest they start outside of the idea? I mean, you don't necessarily have access to people to talk to and, you know, kick the ball around with and figure out your next step and even your idea. So what would you suggest is someone's first step to say, okay, I've got this idea. I have no idea how to do it, but I kind of know it's an idea. And if you're wise enough, you say, I want to know whether it's viable or not. So before you put money and resources into it. So, you know, how would you suggest is your starting point there?
So you have an amazing idea and you're stuck, right? Research. Nothing's new under the sun.
Yes.
I strongly believe that. Mm. And don't try and reinvent the wheel.
Right.
I mean, you do have those differentiation aspects that make you unique. But at the end of the day, if you're making water, water is water.
Right.
How water would be different, I know it's looking at me, would be how you package the water,
right.
Would be how you, the name of the water, would be where you source the water from. But at the end of the day, it's water. So if you have an amazing idea and you definitely need direction as to where to start, research. Google, you can like follow people in a similar business that you're in. I'm not saying necessarily replicated, but because, I mean, it won't be the same. But I'm saying that do your due diligence so that you know exactly what you're doing. If there's licensing involved, how much that's going to cost me. It just doesn't stop when I have a company registration number. There's so many elements to go into you having an established product. So I would say that definitely educate yourself. An educated entrepreneur is an empowered entrepreneur.
Right.
Yeah. So we need to read.
But I have a website. Why am I not receiving calls and emails? Like,
I have an online presence. The product is out there. Yeah. But I'm struggling.
Yeah.
How many requests for assistance in funding do you get?
Too many to mention.
Shoo.
And too many to count.
Is it easier to assist small businesses with funding?
No. Small businesses are not funding ready. Oh. And it's...
Wait. That's very important. Is it that they are not ready or is that... There's no funding.
funding is there. They are not in a position to receive funding. I have to tell people that we're not going to make the deadline. You have too many things outstanding. Oof. Foundationally, I think that's why my page focuses a lot on compliance, because I understand that this is only the first step for someone to take you seriously.
Right.
You are unable to renew an annual return at CIPC, pay for 100 rand. Yeah. No, 150 if you have a penalty. It's 100 rand.
So I always have a penalty.
Yes, you're missing the deadline. Do better. So if you are unable to renew a BE certificate, which is free.
Imagine that.
If you are unable to go to SARS to, even if you are filing a zero nil report, it's free. You definitely don't have a penalty because you do not work.
Yeah.
But how am I going to take you seriously as a funder if you are not taking yourself seriously? So the funding requests come in and they're so vague. I need funding.
For what?
Thank you. For what?
I actually read some of your comments on some of your TikTok TikTok videos. I was like, yeah, they're asking exactly those kind of questions. Like, oh, but can you organize funding for me? Well, I don't know. What do you do? Like, what?
There's so many different types of funding.
Yeah.
This is interesting. Are you saying the entrepreneurs in this country are not that serious?
We're not ready.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, right now. Sorry, right now with the reinstatement, with the deregistrations, I'm just dealing with, I lost my company, I want it back. And when I'm looking at you, you haven't filed. There's someone who had not filed annual return since 2010.
Oh, wow.
I was like, sir, what do you need me to do to
since
help you?
2010.
Where am I going to get banking information from 2010 in order for you to keep your company? When you could have just paid 100 rand from 2010 to now to keep your company active. And there's also just like a misunderstanding of what an annual return is, what a tax return is, where does that happen? So it's just, I have a business and Stan is going to give me a contract and
life is going to go. I'm going to reach out to Lerato.
And then we outsource.
Through my business and then
we outsource a lot. So we'll just say, please register my business. That's it. I don't have access. People don't have usernames. They don't have any passwords. It's a challenge working with SMEs in this country because all I'm thinking about is I just need to sell something to make a profit.
Wait, but are these active businesses or are these like people who hustle and somehow they've registered a company and as and when there's a need for the company, they resuscitate it and they try offer some service? Are these people who wake up every day to go to an office to try and push this company?
Definitely not to go to an office. I think it's dual fold. You register a business because Stan is selling the same thing that I'm selling.
Yeah.
Or it's, hurry up. Hey, you know, there's contracts there. You know, that type of thing. And it's not necessarily starting a business for it to go long term. These are my plans. It's always a rush job. And for those who even are serious about it, we just leave it to a bookkeeper.
Right.
Because most of the emails I get, it's, I thought my bookkeeper had handled this. I thought my business partner had handled this. So,
That's scary.
Let's actually talk about the funding ecosystem a little bit. Assuming a business is ready to receive funding. That's a world. I mean, I come from a commercial background, so I've never really had to until now recently really kind of think about the funding world and how it works and the ins and outs. So assuming I do have my paperwork set up and I do have like a relatively molded idea that could be ready for market, how do I start looking for funders? Like, how does that process work? Because funding is also like a huge ecosystem. It's like depending what you're trying to do. So how does that work really?
So industry specific funding is what you look at. So you look at people because that's the door that will eventually open for you most likely. And then let's talk about the different types of funding.
Right.
Blended financing, where I did say part loan, part grant. Mm-hmm. Full on grant, which are the ones that we all run to because we are the non-repayable,
free money.
And then now, if you take it up a notch, there's venture capitalists, I have to give up a portion of my, shock tank it a bit. So that's what you need to decide. How far am I willing to go?
Yeah.
Because the grants take long. There's risk associated to the blended finance, right. And there's also me losing a part of my equity when it comes to VCs and more privatized.
But at what stage do you have to be to consider blended funding or VCs? Yeah. I would imagine grant at any point, because it's grant, you may be limited to how much you'll get from that grant. But at idea phase, maybe you do apply for grant. But at what stage in your business do you go, maybe I consider blended funding? And what are the requirements there? Compliance, of course, but beyond that, what do they need to see?
The viability of your idea. So you must have tested the idea.
Okay.
Number two, you must have raised a portion of funding yourself.
So she's saying there's no way to avoid the hard work you've got to do.
Yes, there's no, you need to go and and get burnt by the sun a bit.
Getting that, I'm trying to... So they need skin in the game.
You need some skin in the game, especially in tech. Give us a prototype. I'm the next. Yes, you are. Awesome. You have that IP, but do we need it? And don't start a tech company that's solution-based for yourself.
Yeah, you can't be the customer.
You cannot be your own customer. I think that's one mistake that we make. And also, you need to read the room.
Right.
What exactly is the consumer looking for?
You must create product according to customer demands.
Solve a problem.
Right.
And then don't be so set in your ways to say, no, this robot was supposed to open doors for women whose husbands don't open doors for them. And then you're like, oh, okay, maybe I should get a step. We all adapt.
You remind me of that guy from Shark Tank. I'm not sure if you saw him. He created a water dispenser for the toilet. And he said, look, this thing will wet the toilet paper, so when you wipe, this thing is already.
Yeah.
And one of the judges said, dude, have you heard of wet wipes?
Have you?
You have to create an entire machine for the toilet to solve a particular problem.
Yeah.
You said something earlier. You said it was kind of a comment in passing, but you said, South Africa is not ready in terms of just generally how you're thinking about your compliance and getting your paperwork ready. But you're also suggesting that funding is available and funding is there. And I would probably agree with you. I mean, you would know better the industry than I would. But, my feeling is that there's a lot of money in South Africa. There's a lot of money flowing around. There's a lot of people interested in trying to access the market here, potentially into the larger continent. When you're saying, South Africa's not ready. Because the stuff you're talking about that's a lot of stuff I don't know about either. It's also like, there's a huge education learning curve. You've got to spend the time and actually figuring out how all the stuff works, and that's why your services are so valuable, because it does take time. What would be your general take as South Africa as an entrepreneurial space, as a startup space? Does it click in for you? Is it like, not quite there yet? What's your feeling as to South Africa being an innovative country that actually can, we have yet to have a unicorn or anything like that?
There's no unicorn.
So, that says something, even though we've got such great infrastructure and such great institutions here.
We are a fertile ground.
Okay.
I'm happy I said that. The people I interact with get it.
Okay.
But there's just a disconnect between the getting it and the execution.
Okay.
I think where I would want to see improvement is definitely on a work ethic aspect. I think not just blaming...
The system.
Not just creating scenarios. Someone commented on a video where I was talking about, I'll remember. But the person was like, foreigners are taking all that. And I'm like, that excuse is so tired.
Right.
I am so tired of hearing foreigners, the apartheid regime, corruption.
Because foreigners come here, they've got far less means of making stuff happen than an individual born here. So it's like, but they do it all the time. So, I don't want to get into foreign.
Yeah,
issue,
let's not.
But you said just now, I was going to ask you where's the gap? It's a fertile ground and there's a gap between execution. And you actually said it, there's like a, there's kind of like a intangible work ethic. It's like it's almost like a cultural thing almost, and it permeates across across the spectrum here in the country.
Is it though?
I think so. I mean, it's not like a, you know, I wouldn't say there's some data backing that up. I'm just saying it's a general feeling, right?
Yeah. I find it has to do with particular levels of entrepreneurship, right? I have a background in product design, and most of the entrepreneurs I deal with are at a stage where, I mean, they're compliant. They understand you need to have your books in order, you need to be compliant, CIPC, the whole nine yards. But they are stuck at a good product that's just a good product. Mm-hmm. And they're struggling to find, when they speak to VCs, it's like they need historic revenues. But you're at prototype. You've built this thing and you're stuck. You need some cash injection so that you can take this thing to the market. And most of the products I've dealt with are kind of stuck there. But if you go back a bit, there are a lot of entrepreneurs that approach us and go, please design this product for me. As a UX designer, maybe I'm like, okay, Sharp, we'll help you with this, but we'll end here. They're like, Sharp, create a prototype. I'll go request for funding. The guy actually does go. They get funding, but they don't use the money. They return and they want us to change the product so they can just go get funding. So what you then see is there are a lot of entrepreneurs who will just stay at prototype stage because that for them is the business. They'll keep creating prototypes to go get funding. Mm-hmm. And this just, they finance their lifestyle through those through that process. There are entrepreneurs who have products and are stuck at product because they're struggling to get market access. Mm. Then there are entrepreneurs who don't know what they don't know.
Yeah.
All I know is I have an idea. I need money for this thing to work. And sadly, nobody's going to fund your dream because it's your dream. You need to get out there. But they don't know what they don't know. So they're bouncing back and forth between, should I leave this idea? Should I go to work? So I tend to see this problem at different kind of stages. And I'm wondering, what are you seeing the same picture, or for you, is it different? Are you only seeing guys at idea stage who are not very serious about their businesses, or do you tend to see guys that are ready for funding, but they're just struggling to break through?
You can hear there's pain behind that.
Yeah, it came from a very sore place.
I am a disgruntled entrepreneur, after all.
Well, I think it's a bit of both. Yeah. It's very seasonal also. So definitely when it's, now we're in funding season, you know, like now we're just...
There's money?
Yes, there's money now. Wait. I mean, it's the beginning of the year. I mean, we're not the beginning of the year, but we're closing off the financial year. So we need to like get that.
You know this?
How can you not know that?
A disgruntled business.
I like those things because I'm like, get us money.
Guy. Yeah, so when it's funding season, it's definitely the new people that come up. But throughout the year, it's those, I've been pushing, I've been knocking on doors, the very, just on the borderline of quitting that you come across. I think moreover, like in retrospect, we need to chase the money.
Okay.
Just like look at, you are a product of your background, remember that. And just to touch on the point that was made earlier, I think that if we want to take businesses forward, we definitely need to rewrite a lot of things.
Okay.
We have been wired to consume.
Yeah.
So when it comes to you finding out, oh, why is VW manufactured here, but we can't manufacture our own cars? Why is, you know, those type of things, you have to date back to, are we equipped? Why did we end up having to have a Scott Skills visa? When there's so many students in varsities acquiring the same skill, why are we, is the unemployment rate so high?
Right.
Why are we not more enterprising as we need to be? Why is it better for me to draft a CV than a company profile? There's almost a desperation to make it out, but to go the journey, there's a disconnect because we're thinking that getting a salary at the end of the month is better than me building bringing people with me, you know? So
a salary is more comfortable.
Yes, you sit in the comfort. Yeah. It's guaranteed. Yeah. And the business, not so much. You need to keep up with regulations. You need to
pay.
You're paying. And for you to take yourself seriously, it does take a lot of financial muscle too.
Yeah.
for people to also take you seriously. So,
and in terms of positioning, are you finding that a lot of the entrepreneurs that you deal with know where their products should be positioned? Do you find that they understand the personas that they're dealing with, or do we need more education towards that?
We need more education towards that. I remember I did make a video about getting your product on retail.
Yeah.
And people were just that. Like, what? I can do that? You know? I remember I had a store on Uber Eats.
Yeah.
And before that, I thought Uber Eats is for large restaurants. They can never take me and my biscuits. I sold biscuits. They can never take me and my biscuits on Uber Eats. And immediately when I contacted them,
yeah,
they came, onboarded me, trained me for free. And I was on Uber Eats. So what's the other word?
Chutzpah.
We definitely need the chutzpah to get out there. And there's these invisible glass ceilings that we create for ourselves to say that, no, I can never go into a Woolies. I can never see my product in Macro. I can never list my product on Takealot. And we're leaving money on the table.
That's tough.
So I want to ask you a quick question. A particular product you work with in terms of ebooks. As a writer myself, like, I've kind of had it in the back of my mind, not in the sense of like, oh, I want to be an ebook writer, but in the sense of, okay, it's nice. It's viable if I can have a nice ebook in particular areas I'm interested in that I know I have some experience to actually, you know, push particular ebook on. How did that process work for you? Did it work out? Did it not work out? How's that?
It worked out. I had my first digital product on Amazon before Amazon came into the country.
Nice.
That was, what, 2018? Yeah. I wrote a devotional. It was called Two Word Wisdom. It was like two words to demotivate you a day.
To demotivate
you. To motivate you each day. No, I would demotivate the people. And all it took was me just putting words together 30 days and found out how I can get the book on Amazon. I had to create a bank account, an address. It was a lot. Mm. But I did it because, I mean, I had the means to. I had a laptop and Wi-Fi back then. That's all you need to. There is so much money in digital products.
Yeah, because I get, I don't know if it's a dirty word or not, but PDF farming. Is it a dirty word? Is it a dirty? It can be, I guess. Eh?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of trash there.
Yes.
But I'm not so interested in the products itself. I'm more interested in the ecosystem that supports that being a product and how that might work. And I presume you've kind of explored it or thought about it a little bit.
Yeah, I have. There are different ways. It's the PDLR, where you repurpose the existing. You repurpose existing PDFs and books, and you sell them as your own.
I have no idea what that is.
That's not a great.
What most people are doing now.
Ah.
Yes, so they're no real authors anymore.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
It's big. It's a longer story to explain. It's
very complex.
So I can be an author. Thanks for the plug.
You can do it. I'm giving you three business ideas today.
Hey man, you're out here just dishing them off.
It still takes just as much effort as writing.
I mean, when you look at literature and books in South Africa, the last time I did research was that a bestseller in South Africa sells about less than 5,000 copies. And then you're a bestseller. We're not a reading nation again, and as you're going through the times, you're looking at the attention span is just growing. You can, if you go into your stats on like a video that you post a reel,
you can see
how like the percentage of people who watched it till the end, because we just always like, you know,
3 seconds
up. I mean, kids in grade four cannot read. You know, so that they're more. There are a lot of elements that actually, factors that actually.
Yeah.
And if you're not reading, you know the knowledge.
Do we know what those stats were before, say, 2010, about our reading? Were we reading more before 2010?
I think we're reading more. I mean, everyone had newspapers delivered and stuff, you know?
He would know about newspapers.
Yeah, he would was know. Selling he would newspapers. Know.
All right.
So I think, we probably have to, we're a little bit pressed for time. So any we'll leave your details in the description. People can get in touch with you. But any sort of closing viewpoints from yourself in terms of, you know, you want to give some inspirational quote and just say, just start, or how do you want to, anything you want to?
All right. I think right now in the space that I am in and the type of entrepreneur I'm dealing with now, definitely I'd say be fearless. You have nothing to lose. It does come at a price. There's a lot of sacrifice that comes into being your own person. And get the basics. Get the basics right. Get your basic accounting. Get your basic financial management. Get your basic English writing. You know, learn how to do a business writing. Learn how to do a pitch, 1 minute pitch, elevator pitch.
Use ChatGPT.
Yes, definitely take leverage on the tech that's available. ChatGPT is your therapist, your business partner, your assistant, your everything. So I say that when it comes to tech, the world is your oyster.
All right. And from a compliance, somebody out there starting, what should they look out for immediately and what should they keep in mind from CIPC, what is the central database something, SARS? What should they keep top of mind?
Top of mind is to definitely not ignore the correspondence. The reminders are there for a reason. It means you're pressed for time.
Yeah.
Take it seriously. If it means you need to set a calendar reminder to say, I need to file, outsource, but always keep your independence. Definitely have access to your profiles, your systems. That will help you in the long run. Yeah.
And how important is it to be on CSD?
Well, CSD is, if you are interested in tendering or with or supplying the government, then definitely that's your go-to, because the central database where all the procurement departments go and search for people to trade with.
And how do they watch out for the scams and fake emails that come through via the CSD domains? How do you know whether this is really from CSD or just bogus email, somebody telling you to go buy laptops? So, I mean, there's a lot of like spam from that.
I feel there's a wound there. You've been damaged. Right? You've been hurt before.
Pain points today. We're addressing pain points today. So when it comes to RFQ scams, it's out of control, definitely. What I tell my clients is, I actually teach how to, but the basics, verify. Right. If it's not on e-tenders or if it's not on the department website, it's a scam. Okay. Go as far as calling. If you can visit the office, go. Department of Justice, you guys said you wanted carpets. Is this true? You know, you cannot just take everything at face value. That also is what makes a good entrepreneur. Right. You test, as much as you test the market with your product, test the market with the RFQs that you receive.
All right. Lastly, any grant funding available out there?
Yes. So SEDFA grant funding available has been extended to the end of March. Whoa. So please, guys, make sure you take advantage of that. There are 3 tiers thresholds according to your turnover, but there is a startup. There is a startup available funding.
Minimum amount one can apply for?
Ooh, so for the first category, it's 250. The second one is 1 million, and the third one is 5 million. Yes, but this is all based on your turnover.
Million. All right.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much, man.
Thank you, guys.
I hope this is not the last one.
Definitely not. There's more to unpack.
Thanks for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for watching The Angle Podcast. We'll leave all the details in the description below. And you can reach out to Laurent for any business coaching habits that you have. Until next time.
See ya.